And I give you the wonder that is Mr. Declan O'Rourke.
When he met her at the dance, she had flowers in her hair. There was no girl in this land who could have stood next to her there. And there everyone could see how he loved her instantly, though he had nothing to give her but his poor boy's hopes and dreams. Well, he danced with her that summer till it showed on her sweet face, as she was taken by the warmth of him and all his gentle ways. And then he swore to her his love was true, and he married her in poor boy's shoes. Well, not many years had passed through the grip of his strong hands, when a great unyielding hunger drew its veil across this land. Young love soon took ill, and with two little mouths to fill, it took all he could to keep them from the poor house on the hill. But when his pockets had run dry from crying tears that rang like bells, and their home drew in the wind just like an old seashell, then he gathered everything he had to lose, and he walked them up in poor. First God took the little boy, and then he took the little girl, and soon their little souls were free from all the sadness in this world. Their father lifted up his love, she could no longer walk alone, and from the house on the hill, he took her on the long walk home. Felt the cold upon her as he laid her down to rest, and so he knelt down by her bed and drew her feet up to his chest, and there he tried to warm her cold feet through, and they found him there in poor boy's shoes.
Good morning.
My God, is that you? Is that you I hear before me, Declan?
It is.
Jenny Mac.
How are you, Marty?
I'm very good. How are you, dear heart? Ah, it's lovely to hear you.
Fantastic. All the better from hearing you.
Listen, this is fantastic. This means that you've actually mastered the technology. I'm so impressed.
We got it this time.
You did.
I'm delighted.
You're already so good at this. Listen, the first thing I need to say to you is good morning. The first thing I need to say is welcome. And the other thing I need to say is merciful, right. Hour, the size of your book.
Oh, yeah. A nice chunky one. It's I wasn't nice counting words, you know.
No, but in fairness to you, it is quite the tome. Now, I better explain to everybody that you're on tour in the UK, as we speak. Are you playing to full houses, by the way? I mean, you would always attract a very large crowd, Dick. But are you playing to full houses? Is it 100%? It is, I presume.
They are 100%.
Yeah.
I believe, yeah, yeah. And we had our first show last night, and it was with a lovely, large, sizable crowd, as you say.
Yes.
Just lovely. Yeah. Really enjoyed it.
But I mean, it must be wonderful to be out there in front of a full crowd again and to feel that warmth coming back at you.
There's something special about it, isn't there? You know, and all the more so now after the big gap and the big starve.
Yes. Yeah.
So you appreciate it a little bit more, I think, you know.
Well, absolutely. Now, listen, You talk about the starve. Lots of people over the lockdown would have been, you know, putting an album together, or they might have been writing a bit of memoir. You decided to go on a different tack altogether and write. And well, I'll call it. It's a novel, but it's based on truth. Talk to me about the Pawnbroker's Reward. You've written your first book, and it's fantastic. Like, I'm not finished. I'm a good way through it. It's an amazing story. The first thing is I have to say is Chronicles of the Great Irish Famine. Is that what brought this to bear on your mind? Is it?
Yeah, I mean that was the springboard, I suppose. You know, back 20 years ago, just being set on this journey, an almost accidental journey, I'm even kind of dare say that word. You know, I lifted the lid on something that I lifted the lid on the first page of a book, The Workhouses of Ireland, and was kind of hit by a train by the story of the O'Buckle family.
Yeah.
You know, in just a few lines, there was an account by Padraig Lyra, the famous Irish-speaking priest, revivalist, you know, from the Muscarrig Gaeltacht, and it was related to me by John O'Connor. He said, "The man who carried his wife home from the workhouse, mile after weary mile, to their old home, and was found the next morning dead with his wife's feet held to his chest as if he'd been trying to warm them."
It's the saddest. It really is the saddest lines.
Oh, my God. It was just tragedy, utter tragedy, but beauty too, you know?
Yes.
Really, I mean, I think it's universal as well. I was shocked at why don't we all know this? Why, as a nation, or even way beyond that, it's, you know, who could not read that and be moved by it?
And I suppose, in a way as well, it's very much about remembering an appalling time in Ireland, but also remembering who we are. We've been talking to various people about this of late, and it is true, isn't it? It's about trying to remember who we are and saying, here, hang on a second, this is reality. This is what happened to people. And then the Pawnbroker's Reward comes out. I don't know. How long did it take to put this together? Because it's a huge story.
Well, I began it in 2018, I think.
Oh.
Marty, about mid-2018. And I got fits and starts of, you know, attempts at it and early kind of experiments began with possible short stories and things like that.
Yes,
But really, you know, the main thrust of it came last year during lockdown, and I locked myself in a room every single day. I didn't miss a day in over 6 months at one stage, 7 days a week.
Right.
Just locked myself in a room for, you know, a minimum of a few hours, kind of, but it grew. And
yeah.
By the end, my wife was saying, would you not just take Sundays off, please? Give us a bit of your time.
But because of the story, did you become slightly different? In other words, like, there's not an enormous amount of happiness going on here, let's be honest. And therefore, you're eating, sleeping and drinking this as you write it. So did you have to kind of shut the door on it when you'd returned to your family, Declan? You must have.
No, it never bothered me in that
really?
Way at all. No,
it's not
no.
Funny.
I hear what you're saying. I know the subject matter generally can be perceived. But, you know, I always wonder why people have this thing about the famine. I've been asked over the years, what is it with this subject? Why are you so fascinated with it? But, you know, nobody ever asked that question about World War II or something, which is...
Yes, which seems...
You know, it's vast and just utterly miserable in every respect. But, you know, we're all fascinated with this subject and how people survive and the tiny stories within the story. And
yes,
this is exactly the same. We have it on our own doorstep, but we don't often look at it because it's just that little further back. Technology wasn't around to gift us images the same way and that. But there are these amazing, amazing stories and accounts, if you find them, of what people did to survive and the individual struggles and heroism.
Yes.
You know, and I see that. I see the hope and, you know, the bravery and that's what I captured or tried to capture in these people.
Yes.
So, I think there's a lot more to it than the sadness. I get uplifted by it. But then there's the writer part of me that just the thrill of working on something, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
exactly. Yeah, but it, again, because you're a songwriter and because you're a storyteller, naturally, it probably in some ways poured out of you. Do you know? Listen, I want to play Along the Western Seaboard just to uplift everybody. I think it's important that we play this. What do you think? Will I play it?
Go for it.
All right, here it is. Along the Western Seaboard, I'm talking to Declan O'Rourke. The Pawnbroker's Reward is his very first book.
I offer you today. Some of the people in the parish have been asking me to pray for them. They have no strength to help themselves. They need help fending for themselves. And we do all we can do, but there's so little that we can do. And this is the worst winter I know of, even worse than last. The snow has stayed for too long on the ground, and for the second year around now, all across our little island, we give all our sweat and toil, and still the crops they have all rotted in the soil. And all along the western seaboard they await with open hands for something to feed their children or a ship to foreign lands. But there's nothing here to give them except for chicken feed and sand, while Britannia rules the roost with iron hands. Lord, what can we do now? Oh, good Lord, what can we do when we need to feed so many and there's not even for the few? Lord, what can we do now? Lord, what can we do? They are starving, they are freezing, and their clothes have all worn through. Situation that the nation's in, somehow I can't see many pulling through, because even if we had the food to feed them, many have disease. Lord, I
Declan, Along the Western Seaboard, the other thing too, there's a section in it, it's called A Mountain Is in Labour. Can I just take a little bit out of this just to share with the listener?
Go
bang bang bang, forcibly pulled from a realm of relative peace to one of confusion and disappointment, Creed mumbled to himself, what? Bang, bang, bang. Yes, yeah, I'm coming. Shaking his head, he clicked his tongue in irritation and hurried to dress. Who could that be, Con? Balelin moaned. God knows, not to know the law's changed. Anyway, it goes on about, this is the pawnbroker. The narrative jumps off the page. Did you enjoy doing this? Did you enjoy bringing these people to life in this way in the book?
I did. I loved it. You know, I was like a kid in a sweet shop in a way, because I knew nothing about what I was doing in the official sense, you know.
Yeah.
Writing, you know. And yet, I suppose, without knowing, I've developed a kind of a skill set over the years, and I trust myself to a certain extent. So I was just, you know, I was never daunted, or I enjoyed going into the room every day and saying, what can I do that's going to be really fun? And, you know, just trying all these different things and angles and, you know, perspectives. And
but did it,
and it was just a thrill.
Yeah, but did as you were writing it, did you think to yourself, because it does read, like, with all due respect, it reads a bit like a screenplay. You know, I could see the vision in it, because as a songwriter, that's what you do. You paint pictures, you put music to it, and we have a story and a song and whatever. With the book, we've no music, but what we do have is the picture in our mind as we read. So were you thinking about the... Because it's a touch of a screenplay. I mean, I could see it being made into a film or into a TV series or something. Do you feel that at all? I mean, it must have been said to you already by Gail or some people along the line.
My editor said it numerous times. He said, when this is made into... you know, a TV series or a film or whatever, yeah. You know, and, you know, I will say part of me was excited about the prospect of that. But,
yeah, because you can visualize it. Yeah, because it's your story.
Yeah, well, but that initial account I read of those people.
Yes.
Did that to me, like, you know.
Poor boy shoes, absolutely.
Away,
yes.
Yeah, it stripped away a century and or nearly two centuries of time and put me in the room as if, you know, it's my job then to just try and tell the rest of their story in the same way, you know, to try and help people to see it.
Yes, yeah.
That's what you're trying to do, so, yeah.
And when I was going through the book and I was saying to myself, if you need anybody, I could play Dr. Crook. Small part, I could play Dr. Crook if that's okay.
Great, you like Dr. Crook.
Well, I have the moustache, okay, you see, yeah. I have the moustache. I come with the look. That's what I'm thinking. That's one of the characters in it. When you write a book like this, when you come up with a story like this, and you're trying to put it all together, do you have a... I'm just curious about this. You don't have to answer this if you're not bothered, but the idea of name, when you have all these characters, do you kind of line them all up and then place them into the story? Like, how does that unfold when you're sitting in there day after day after day with all these people in your head for the pawnbroker's reward? How does that work? I'm just curious.
Well, I think it's a bit like a giant jigsaw.
Yes.
But you can make it up. But then there is a map because, you know, you're following the timeline and you're following what it's telling you. Certain things happen at certain times that stick out and you're like, oh God, I have to write about that.
And reminding yourself of things that I need to put that in again or whatever.
Exactly, you know, and then there's certain gaps to be filled in. Sometimes what you're given is so brilliant that you just have to try and capture it well.
Yes.
But other times you know that something must have happened because A happened and C happened, so B is missing, and you have to gather as much information as you can about that and then put it back together, you know, and dramatize it and then make it all seamless.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
But I was gifted with, you know, Cornelius Creed for a start, discovering that man in all the years...
The pawnbroker.
...that I worked on. Yes, exactly.
Yes.
In all the years that I worked on the songs and read book after book, I never came across somebody like him. It was just like hitting a gold vein when I found him. And the letters that he wrote to the newspapers and his accounts, you know, and literally the poor were crossing his doorstep every day, you know, on the way to the workhouse.
But that's the story. He's in the middle. He's in the middle of the story.
He's right in the middle, you know. And so he began as a set of eyes and ears. I just thought, this guy is going to be a great conduit. But as I got to know him and to care for him as well.
Right.
And see his own tragedy unfolding, you know, he kind of muscled his way into to being quite central to the story too.
Yeah.
I had to go with it.
Well, it's It's a huge piece of work. You know, some people would say, but you know, everyone has a novel in them. All that carry on. You've taken facts. You've taken history, Irish history, and you've brought it alive. And you know, there's not many do that. There's not many people can do that. You know, there's some people over the years have been able to do it, but you've literally brought it to life. And also, it's a time that we shouldn't forget. And I think that's the point you made earlier on about people talking about World War II and all the books you see about that. It's a time we should not forget. And how divided as a people we were in so many ways.
We shouldn't forget it. You're so right. You know, I think it suffers as a subject, you know, and a period in our history that for many years has been kind of relegated to this grey thing that we shouldn't engage with. But I think in some ways, we're ready to look at it differently now, you know.
Yeah.
From the comfort of distance. But I've said too that the story of these people, when you find a kind of an entry like this, and you know, it changes the way you look at it. It did for me, and I just wanted to share that with people. I think it's a story of like Greek tragedy proportions, what happened to these people, and it just told itself, or it's a story that needs to be told. I think anybody anywhere in the world could hear the story of those people the way Padraig O'Leary said it, and you'd have to be moved.
But that's the point, isn't it?
Say it over and over, you know?
Yes, exactly, but that is the point. And it's then the ability that Declan O'Rourke has to take the story and to turn it into this narrative so that we follow them as real people. But in other words, you read history books and it's there, and it's the story of, and it's all about what happened, and it's dreadful, obviously. But when you put names on people, then as we read the book, we then have faces to identify with, and we care about them. And
exactly,
I think that's what the Pawnbrokers Award did for me as I've been reading it. I'll probably finish it by March.
I'm so glad to hear that, Marty.
Yeah, but you see, I think that's what you've done. You've put faces on the people, and therefore we now care more than we would if we didn't have faces on them. Isn't that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, a strange thing that kind of hit me is I think, ironically, the story of the Obuokla family, say, is bigger than the famine itself.
Yeah.
A tiny story like that is much more, you know, we can't understand the famine, it's too big, you know.
Correct, yeah.
It's a vast thing, like World War II again. But the individual story that we're told, we can relate to it. We imagine our own family, our own children in that room, and it just breaks your heart.
Exactly.
And, you know, as a human being, you can understand that. And it's like a microcosm gives you the whole understanding of it, you know.
Yeah, but do you remember Live Aid? Do you remember Live Aid and the whole story of Michael Burke, the newsreader on the television? And the story was that they showed one child who was starving in Africa. And that started the process of people suddenly saying, hang on a second, Bob Geldof clearly starting that process. But if you saw thousands of people starving, you go, okay. But it was one child on the television that you know, sparked people's concern, and Bob Geldof particularly, and away it went. So it's the same thing, isn't it? You put this guy in the middle.
Yeah,
you put this guy in the middle. Listen, it's wonderful. It really is. I'm delighted we had a chance to have a chat, because I realise that you're now far more interested in touring and being fabulous than all the rest.
But I couldn't help this. I tried to keep them a year apart, you know.
I know, but they're all piling up. Isn't it wonderful, you know?
Yeah.
And you'll have to talk to me about Canterbury Cathedral Lodge. That'll be some gig. By golly, that'll be some gig. What a great venue! But anyway, you've been doing all of that. Can we finish on Arrivals? Do you mind?
No problem, Marty.
Because you know, or Stars Over Convara. Actually, do you know what? Stars Over Convara might be more appropriate with the Pawnbrokers Award, because it's about family and the heart and love and fondness. What do you think?
Oh, I'd love that. Thank you.
Yeah, well, they both are, but, you know. Listen, it's been great. Love your company, you know that. And now I've booked it. It'll take me through into the new year. And I'm looking forward to finishing it. It's an amazing piece of work, Declan. I love it. The Pawnbrokers Award is called, and Declan O'Rourke. Listen, keep touring and keep being as great as you are, my friend. And I hope we'll get to be together at some stage and share a small sherry.
Thank you so much, Marty. It's been a pleasure as always. I was dying to talk to you. I was really looking forward to it. So I'm glad we made it happen.
You did. You did. And the technology allowed it. God bless you. You've learned another trick. God bless you, Declan. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Marty.
Through dark summer nights on his racing bike, your great-granda might go killing. When art classes were done in Galway town, cycled home the miles between. And the moon overhead led him home as he sped, till the stars over Kinvara said, welcome. I dreamed of living here, where Atlantic waves neath Dungura's gaze keep the air so fresh and clear. I was 25 when I first laid eyes on where I knew children's eyes. And the stars over Kinvara said, welcome . First night I drove you and Mammy home, I pulled over in Ballandarine. I just had to pull in, I had never seen such a sky of gems that gleamed. Orion was out and the starry the night was on display over the burren, the road and the bay.
You've been listening to Marty in the Morning on RTE Lyric FM.